You wait, my travel agent is going to hear about this. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast with an IQ of 133 and a green belt in Taekwondo. Now, success breeds imitation, and in the world of film, that means when a movie hits it big with a neat, new, and novel concept, it's inevitable that cash-hungry and ideas-poor producers are going to try and repeat the trick. So, when the Prisoners on an Airplane action film Con Air became a box office smash, it didn't take the impresarios of low-budget film producers Royal Oaks Entertainment long to come up with their own version of the convicts escaping while being transported tale. In the film's one and only act of imagination, they moved the action from a plane to a train, and thus was born Evasive Action. Now, given we're reviewing a Con Air imitator, there was really only one man to go to. Sadly, Mark Hoffmeyer wasn't available, so instead I'm joined by Jay Cluett from the Con Air pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Mark. I'm going to answer everything in movie quotes today, and everything I say is good for me. Film quotes.
Excellent. Well, we will reveal why you might be answering questions in that way a little bit later when we get stuck into Evasive Action. But astute listeners will remember that you've been on this podcast before in several different guises, but this time you're here wearing your Con Air pod hat. So do you want to tell people what that show is all about?
Yes, so Con Air, the podcast, is very similar to Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, which I probably plugged the last time I was on here, where Mark and I could see the Mark joke coming. I could see you're going to, and it still hurt. we covered the entire Deep Blue Sea trilogy, one DVD chapter at a time, and we've now finished that. We found another film that we both love, which is Con Air, and we're going through that scene by scene. We've broken Con Air up into 40 chapters. Turns out that was too many chapters, but we stuck with it. We've made the plan, and we're plowing on ahead. So yeah, we're scene by scene, week by week, with a bunch of our friends, most of whom like Con Air. And I was kind of shocked watching back through it, thinking, okay, we're gonna have Will on for the exploding helicopter chapter of Con Air, because if any film is going to have an exploding helicopter, it's Con Air, and it doesn't. It feels like it's missing from that pantheon of there's no chopper. There aren't helicopters in it.
There's a helicopter.
It flies in front of the line of another helicopter trying to shoot down a plane. No helicopters blow up.
They lay all the groundwork, but they don't follow through with the payoff.
It's ridiculous. So the fact that there are no exploding helicopters and you're not a fan of Con Air means you sadly won't be gracing us for this chapter of our show.
No, I'm Con Air agnostic. I don't dislike it. I don't love it. I'm just, it's fine. It's entertaining. It's a movie. But it doesn't hold any special place in my heart. But, you've been doing the deep dive into Con Air. And before that, you were, going over Deep Blue Sea in similar fashion. And, you know, that made me wonder, you know, when you're going through a film in that particular fashion, you know, do you actually get to a point where you think, you know what, I don't like this. I'm sick of talking about this film. I've had enough.
It hasn't happened yet. I'll say that. I feel like I mentioned we've done Con Air in too many chapters. A lot of them are kind of similar. We had like three or four in a row of just John Cusack and Cole Meany yelling at each other. It's like, this is the great thing about this is why we have to have guests on, because otherwise it's just me and Mark like, yep, they're still kind of pointing and yelling. There's the Irish accents coming back out again. So having the guests on and having their perspective, and Mark is a wonderful co-host in that I never know what direction his brain's going to go in on any given day. So he always manages to find some kind of a tangent to spin off on that's unexpected. So that's always fun. And we often like recast the film and just pitch sequels or Con Air adjacent films, which are a lot of fun. Rocky Goes to Hell is my favorite one that we've pitched so far, I think.
Well, I don't know. That feels like Rocky V to me. But anyway, I think we're doing far too much talking about Con Air here. We're here to talk about Evasive Action. So, let's...
A completely different film.
A completely different film. So let's get stuck into Evasive Action. But before we do that, let's listen to a clip from the film.
Hey, Warden.
Jack Crane.
Ralph Kanner.
How are you, Ralph?
All right, let's get this show on the road. Who's who?
That's Tommy Zimmer, first-degree murderer. Killed his wife and the girl she was screwing around with. He's doing life. Luke Sinclair. His wife and daughter were killed. So what does he do? He pops the guy who did it right on the courthouse steps.
Guess I wouldn't have done the same thing.
He's a pretty straight shooter. I doubt he'll give you any trouble. That's Hector, the director, Miller. Murdered 11 people about 6 years ago. Always reenacts a scene from a horror film. Mostly talks in movie quotes.
Yeah, I heard some story about when this guy was in Canada waiting to get transferred.
Yeah, pretended to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
When the nurse came in, old Hector.
I ain't better tell that, right?
That's Ian Kelly, convicted arsonist and explosives expert. He fashioned a bomb out of a roll of tinfoil and drain cleaner. Killed 14 people at a rent-a-car agency. He said he wasn't satisfied with the service.
Apparently not. Yeah, this one I know. Lorenzo Michele, head of the biggest crime family on the West Coast. What's he serving, 300 years?
He's only got 292 left.
I tell you, Jack, I feel a hell of a lot better if we were flying.
Well, ever since that plane load of prisoners went down in Vegas, the FAA doesn't want to have anything to do with us. Besides, that's a state-of-the-art prison car. I doubt if the passengers will ever even know you're there.
A group of dangerous prisoners need to be transported to a new maximum security prison. Having witnessed the disastrous events of Con Air when the authorities tried to transfer prisoners by plane, the criminals here are to be transported in a special rail carriage attached to a regular passenger train. But it soon becomes apparent that some of the prisoners have an escape plan. Among the jailbirds, we have a mad bomber, an unhinged serial killer, and a notorious mafia boss. Also among their number is our hero, played by Dorian Harewood. He just wants to serve out his sentence, but finds himself caught up in the middle of this chaos. With his future freedom at stake, Harewood decides that the only way to avoid an extended stay in Chokey is to thwart the prison breakout. Alongside Dorian Harewood, we have the late, great Roy Scheider, who starred in the exploding helicopter classic Blue Thunder. And filling out the cast, we have a host of familiar faces, even if they are not particularly famous, including Sam Jones, Ray Wise, Ed O'Ross, Richard Ferrangi, and Dick Van Patten. We also have a couple of people who are the brothers of more famous actors, specifically Clint Howard, brother of Ron, and Don Swayze, brother of Patrick. Evasive Action came out in 1998 and is directed by Jerry P. Jacobs, who directed a few films, but most of his career was spent doing second unit work. This film, which also goes under the name Steel Train, was made for the home video market and has a 4.5 rating on IMDb. So with all of that out of the way, Jay, what did you make of Evasive Action?
When you first kind of pitched this film for the cover on here, you said it was less than great. So I went in with some kind of subpar, bottom of the barrel expectations, thinking this is going to be utterly awful. Bear in mind, I spent 10 consecutive weeks covering Deep Blue Sea 2, so I know how to talk about a bad film. Which actually, that's a film that the more we talked about it, the more we liked. Mark loves Deep Blue Sea 2. It's a terrible film, but I have fond memories of discussing it. So, you know, that's how you learn to like a film. You pick a bad film and then talk about it every week for 2.5 months and you will love it. There is no other choice.
We're not, you'll be relieved to know we're not planning to do that with Evasive Action, though.
Good, wonderful. So, yes, I didn't hate this. I kind of enjoyed it. It's got a wonderful cast, some actors that I really like. Ray Wise is an actor who I haven't seen enough things, but whenever I see him crop up, I love him. And I was thrilled when he's, oh my God, Ray Wise is in this. He's not in it enough. It's a complaint I have, but I enjoyed most of the other actors going on here. But about 2/3 of the way through, it does kind of lose its way.
Mm.
I think it's like a solid, decent kind of diehard Con Air ripoff in the vein of, you know, not as good as, but in the vein of like Cliffhanger or Air Force One or whatever, but nowhere near as good as them. But then like at some point when Dorian Harewood's character kind of gets off the train, at that point onwards, I'm like, this has kind of lost me a little bit because some decisions are made that don't really make a great deal of sense. characters are just kind of killed off in quick succession. It's a little bit far-fetched beyond that point.
Yeah.
You reference in your intro the kind of statistics of the little girl. with the IQ and the green belt. She gets to use none of these skills. She is just a generic hostage who makes a little quip here and there, has apparently seen Taxi Driver despite being like 10, which is too young. I know you're a fan of that film, but too young that age to have seen Taxi Driver. No. But yeah, I didn't hate it. I expected this to be a lot worse than it was. It's by no means a recommendation. It could have been worse.
I didn't hate it. I'll take that as an excellent summary of this film, because yeah, I think my thoughts were very similar to yours, and I completely agree with the point that you were making. Like the first half of this film is actually quite promising. There's a really heavy clunky exposition at the beginning, but once we get through that, actually it's quite sort of neatly done setup, and the main action of the plot gets going in good order, and it's all sort of nicely done. There's some draws the characters quite neatly and effectively, yeah. But it definitely runs out of ideas by the second half of the movie, where you're just like people are just moving through the train again for reasons that are sort of you've lost interest why they now need to get from one end of the train to the other end again, and yeah. It's a bit unfortunate they didn't quite have enough sort of ideas to get through that that back end of the film. But you mentioned the little girl, and she was emblematic of a couple of things in this film which I just felt like were missed opportunities and might have actually livened up that second half of the film, because she tells us that she's got an IQ of 133 and this green belt in Taekwondo, which you just think, having watched any number of these films, you just think, okay, this is a setup for something. She's gonna outsmart the baddie, or she's going to, chop him down to size with a few Taekwondo moves. But nothing ever comes of it. And also, like, I was kind of waiting also for Clint Howard's character, who is this, who's the kind of the Steve Buscemi of this film, if you've seen Con Air.
The director.
Yes, exactly. You kind of expect him to, he's this sort of loose cannon in the equation, and you kind of expect him to play some sort of interesting role in this film, but he never does. And I was left thinking, what was going on there? Why sort of bother to set them up if you're not actually going to do something with these characters?
Yeah, he's a big loose end in that everything gets tied up apart from spoiler for Con Air, Steve Buscemi gets away at the end. He's gambling at a casino table. At the end of Evasive Action, we don't know where Hector is. Everyone else is kind of tied up for, apart from there's a carriage load of hostages somewhere that we don't really see yet, including the little girl. But Hector is somewhere in the world, maybe alive, maybe dead, we don't know. There is a post-credits scene that I thought was going to show, okay, this is going to be where Hector... Nope, he's not involved in that. He is a character I did not care about. Again, there. I was very frustrated with him, and even more frustrated that, he quotes Jaws, featuring Roy Scheider. He quotes Apollo 13, a film he is in. I was waiting for him to quote Flash Gordon and Roadhouse, just to like tie up the rest of the cast members.
Yes, that would have been very good. Or he only quotes from films that Ron Howard has made or something. Like I think they needed to go like further with that meta element that they had introduced into the film. And there is even there is actually a sort of an extra meta element, because he's uncredited in the list.
His dad
yes, yeah. Appears in this film. So
Rance Howard,
yeah, yeah. You kind of think, okay, if you're gonna, don't just lean in a little bit, lean in all the way, and yeah, kind of go the whole hog. And unfortunately this film kind of it misfires on that particular front.
Is it bad that I thought Rance Howard was in this, that makes sense, he's Ron Howard's dad, Ron Howard got Clint Howard and Rance Howard in this, I didn't think, oh, he's Clint Howard's dad. I passed everything through the most famous one of that family.
Well, I think that's how I invariably sort of think of these actors, like, who is, because you have these acting families, and they're like maybe third or four generations of actors in there, and sort of, I always think of the most famous one is the you know, is the sort of like the father of them all, even if they're like the third generation of the actor is the most famous one in the family. I kind of think, well, he fathered the lot of them. But yeah. I mean, one other aspect of this film that I mentioned already is the kind of exposition dump at the beginning. And I don't know, when I was watching this film, I thought, would it have improved the film if that had been the reasons for Dorian Harewood's incarceration had actually been a bit of a mystery that we then learnt about like later on in the film? I mean, do you think that would have improved it? Because obviously this film has Con Air as its template. We know when watching Con Air that Nicolas Cage is a good guy, because you know, we know why he's in prison right from the outset of this film. But I, you know, Evasive Action is following that template. But I wondered, actually, would it have been better if we didn't know what his reasons for being in prison were?
I like that pitch. I think that would have been great. Yeah, we open up with him being rejected by the parole board. We don't find out why, and then because there is a flashback to the prologue. Not long after that, I think we see the same thing twice.
they got to get it up to the runtime, Jay. I think that's what that was about. It's like we're still 2 minutes short of the 90.
That's true, but yeah. So I did think that the kind of prologue, yes, it's subtle as a brick, but I liked how it was done. I liked kind of the shaky handheld POV shot of the aftermath of the murder and the court case. You immediately hate the killer. Blowing that kiss from the top of the steps, you're like, yeah, shoot him, get him now, come on. And when they're getting on the train and we're getting the list of who all the people are, and the kind of the head guard of the train is like, yeah, I would have done the same thing myself. The setup they give you for Dorian Harewood's character is very much you're on this guy's side completely, 100%. He shot a man in daylight outside a courthouse next to a couple of cops, but you're on his side.
Yeah, I think. There was a sort of a lack of bravery there, possibly from the filmmakers there, that they just thought, you know what, if the viewer's not clear who the hero is meant to be at the outset of the film, that they probably would worry that they would lose an audience. But I think it would have been a better, more interesting film if that there'd been a bit of ambiguity as to why he was in prison. But we sort of danced around this. We sort of mentioned things sort of here and there about how similar this film is to Con Air. So, I mean, you know, you're writing the, not writing the book, you're recording the podcast on Con Air. You know, how Con Air-ish did you find Evasive Action?
I found it far enough away to be a sequel rather than a remake. So yes, there are a lot of similarities. You have the hero who committed a crime, killed a guy, but in extenuating circumstances. He's got a best friend, cellmate, is being transferred with him, but where this one differs is that guy's a terrible person who killed his wife and her lover when he found out she was cheating on him. And we're still, when we first meet him, like, oh, Zim, because you never find out what Baby-O did in Con Air. It's one of the beautiful things of that script is you never find out. He's classed as being one of the worst, being transferred with like these serial killers and people who like trash an entire NRA meeting and kill everyone involved. And like, you have this guy who is like apparently on some kind of a life sentence, it'll be a long time before he gets parole, but you never find out quite what he did. So that's a great thing about the Con Air script is not revealing that. We have our own theories, of course. We should have to listen to Con Air the podcast to find out what Baby-O did in our eyes. But when they say like, oh, Zim, yeah, he killed his wife and her partner, you immediately stop rooting for this guy, and then he tries to kill Luke Sinclair later on. So that's the escape method is different. It's quite similar with like going off to a toilet and getting a little lockpick out of the toilet holder is similar to Dave Chappelle coughing up a match and breaking out there, I guess.
Well, what's his name? Doesn't Malkovich have a pin or something underneath his skin that he pulls
out?
Yeah,
in his hand. Yes. He and Ving Rhames, they both have pins in there to pick the locks. But there's far fewer criminals on board in this one. And having all of the passengers as well, a train full of passengers, makes this more diehard than Con Air, I'd almost say, with lots more hostages involved.
But they also disguise themselves as marshals in this film, which is obviously a link back to Con Air. And just like the ending of Con Air, the train crashes into Los Angeles.
Yes,
similar to the plane crash ending at the end of Con Air. So there are quite a lot of similarities. Although the footage in Con Air of the plane crashing into Las Vegas was obviously created and shot specifically for that film. I don't know. Did the footage of the train crash at the end seem familiar to you at all, Jay?
Oh, I feel like it should have done, but it didn't. Where would I have seen this before?
You would have seen it before in Silver Streak with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
I haven't seen Silver Streak, so I'm gonna forgive myself for not recognizing it.
Well, yeah, you can forgive yourself for that. So yes, a lot of the exterior shots of the train and obviously that big crash at the end is all footage that's been lifted from that film. So you see this as a sequel. So, I mean, to Con Air rather than a remake. And obviously that's kind of how this film sort of pitches itself, because there's a line of dialogue in here where they say, oh, you know, why aren't we flying these prisoners? And, you know, somebody from the prison service says, oh, you know, since that plane went down in Vegas last year, we can't, you know, the FAA won't let us transport prisoners, you know, on planes anymore. So you'd see this as part of is this film you know, part of the Con Air universe? Obviously it's not official canon, but can we give it that status ourselves, do you think?
I think so. I think this could be Con Air 2 Evasive Action. what was the other title of it?
Steel Train.
Yeah, Con Air 2 Steel Train. I prefer that. Yeah, that sounds more like Con Air than Evasive Action. Could be the title of 1,000 films.
It really is. It's two of the most generic words that've been put together. But
I kept forgetting the title of this film every time. I need to watch. What is that film? It's about the train action, Evasive Train.
What do you think is a better... Because, I mean, it's a terrible title in Evasive Action. You prefer Steel Train, do you?
I do. Because then at least I can remember what I'm watching, what I'm talking about.
But even Steel Train, I mean, that makes it sound like you're just sort of shipping, you know, manufactured goods or something. I don't know.
It's true, yeah.
I mean, Train
Rail
would have been...
Conrail,
yes. Now that would have...
That and I feel like now this train's crashed into LA station, the train company won't have anything to do with us. Next time we're on the Greyhound bus.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, is what would your idea for Con Air 3 be?
We pitched on Con Air, we pitched that the British remake of Con Air would be Scum Bus.
What, sort of like the Megabus? As
basically, yeah. Which, taking the likes of Ray Winston up and down the country.
I quite like that.
Yeah, we cast the whole thing. I can't remember what's within it. Like Toby Kebbell, I think, might be my lead pitch for that one. I like Toby Kebbell. Ray Winston, I think, was in the Ving Rhames role. A bus would work. I feel like Con Air at Sea could be a decent, like trying to like having to ship people to like a prison island somewhere on a ferry could work.
Yeah. I like it.
Con wave?
Yeah, con ship sounds... That doesn't sound exciting enough. That sounds... Yeah.
And Simon West has alluded to the director of Con Air, has alluded to a potential sequel that would be Con Air in space. So Con Shuttle, I don't know. Or Con Space, I guess. But I that's always been said with tongue-in-cheek. Never going to happen. Although the surviving cast members of the actors whose characters survived are more than happy to come back for it, I think.
You mentioned that you liked the cast in this film. So who kind of caught your eye, either for good reasons or bad?
I mentioned Ray Wise. His hair has never been blacker than in this film.
He does have wonderful, lustrous locks of hair, doesn't he?
He does, and it is definitely not him on the side of that helicopter. when a character jumps on the side, I'm thinking, who is this new character who has appeared? Who is like some kind of sheriff's deputy? And then I had to piece it together later on. Oh, that was supposed to have been Ray Wise. Okay, we see that stunt double's face far too much.
Well, I felt very sorry for Richard Ferrangi in this film, because, you know, he's an older gentleman. He's I think he was 67 when he made this film.
Oh, wow. And, yeah, he's one of the morons in Midnight Run, isn't he?
He is, yes. And Roy Scheider, who, you know, keeps ordering him to sort of get up on the top of the train and or start, you know, orders him to clamber around the side of carriages and things. And I was just like, come on, this guy should be picking up his pension. He shouldn't be risking life and limb running around on the outside of a train. But
I did really like him. He's an actor that I do enjoy. And he, I mean, running along the train is kind of the biggest set piece of the film, which is people running across the top of this train back and forth. So he does get a lot of that to do, and he was a character that I enjoyed. He was very concerned about his shoes, about the little girl spinning a root beer on his shoes.
One thing I wanted to talk to you about, as well as films, you know, I'm a big music fan, and I'm always intrigued by actors who dabble as singers and songwriters, and that's the case here, because, until prepping for this episode, I was entirely unaware that Dorian Harewood, is also a singer, or an aspiring singer at any rate, because in 1988, he recorded an album entitled Love Will Stop Calling, and one of the songs from that album, No Excuses, plays out over the end credits here. Now, this was the only record old Dorian recorded, so in the pursuit of thoroughness, I asked Jay to listen to this record so we could decide if acting's gain was music's loss. So Jay, what did you make of Dorian Harewood the singer?
About as good as Dorian Harewood the actor, and I didn't much care for Dorian Harewood the actor. I listened to the album in its entirety. I regret this decision. It's not bad. Some of the songs are quite slow. They're all very repetitive. Drip Dry, I've had to be quite a toe-tapper. But the rest of them, I've kind of already passed through my mind. And I re-listened to No Excuses again just before we started recording, and I've already forgotten it. So...
Yeah, I kind of think that the only reason that this, that song No Excuses turned up in this film was that it was cheaply available to the producers here, because obviously Dorian's, yeah, sure, you know, I can promote my singing and try and shift some of those unsold copies of the album that are stuck under my bed or stuck in my garage. But I've tried to do some research on this particular record and on his recording career, and I can find absolutely no information on it. It is a rather sort of mysterious sort of moment in his career in entertainment, because this album was released on a record label which only ever released one record, which was this album by Dorian Harewood. I can't find out who was behind that record label, so I'm kind of figuring it was probably Dorian Harewood himself. I mean, he, in fairness to him, you know, he wrote a lot of the songs on this, and he's actually a decent singer. He can certainly sing, that's for sure. I agree with you that the music was not terribly exciting. It falls into that 80s Alexander O'Neill type of Jeffrey Osborne type of soul, with a lot of synthesizers, which I only 80s synthesizers, I have a very love-hate relationship with them. They can sound awful or they can sound great. But there was some actual sort of musical talent involved in this album, because sort of helping with a lot of the songwriting were a couple of people from, I don't know if you're familiar with the 70s band Heatwave. They did Boogie Nights. You must know that.
I know of that song, but I can't say I've listened to a lot of their oeuvre.
So the kind of guy who's Keith Harrison, who was one of the mainstays in that group, also in the Daz band as well. He's got had a lot of input on the music here. So, you know, they obviously he was able to sort of hook himself up with some people with some pedigree. But all in all, a very unmemorable album. So,
you didn't know if No Excuses was written for the film?
No, because The album came out in 88, so, and there's obviously this film's 10 years later. So,
of course, okay, fair enough.
So yeah, it was obviously blew the dust off and said, yeah, you know what, I've got the, you know, I got the mark, you can got the DAT tapes here, you can use you know, knock yourself out with that. But okay, so you didn't care for Dorian Harewood, the actor, and you didn't care for him, the singer. So
not yeah. much, but I have to take this moment to plug one of my favorite actor albums, if I may, which is Vinnie Jones's album Respect.
Oh my god, I was unaware of this.
It's Vinnie Jones covering some like big band songs from the past. Everybody Needs Somebody, Bad Leroy Brown, Sitting on Top of a Bay, Hi Ho Silver Lightning. Mustang Sally. It's delightful. It's on all the places you can find albums. It's well worth a listen. I've listened to it more times than I probably should have. My wife hates it.
Oh, I'm going to have to check this out.
It's from 2002, of Vinnie Jones's height.
And what's it called? The album's called Respect.
Respect. Okay. Yes, of course it is.
Well, I will be. I know what I'm doing as soon as I'm finishing this this recording.
You're welcome.
It's, okay, I think I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Gary Daniels, World Kickboxing Association champion, and Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa, world famous master of Chun Shin and star of Mortal Kombat. Two martial arts masters.
Why don't you just walk away?
Face to face.
Have you ever been pushed so far that you have no choice? I can't just walk away.
Without fear.
He uses a girl to bring you to anger. And ultimately, destruction.
In a war without mercy.
You must forget her until the battle is won.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. Scheider's escape plan involves being picked up by helicopter. However, the police move in to stop the prisoners escaping, and during the gunfight, the helicopter is damaged by rifle fire. Trailing smoke, the wounded chopper limps off, disappearing behind a nearby ridge. We hear a crash, and a plume of flames leaps into the sky. The chopper, we must conclude, is no more. Jay, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
So this is my third time on the show, and in comparison to the other exploding helicopters I've had, the one in Deep Blue Sea is phenomenal. Big explosion, shark is involved in exploding it, takes out an entire aquatic base, rampage, loads of different helicopter explosions by a giant wolf, all over the place. Fantastic scene. This one is terrible. This one, as you say, the helicopter just kind of limps over the hill, disappears, then quite a nice big plume of explosion. I liked that. But the helicopter blowing up bit, rubbish. I hated it.
Yeah, it's one of the worst tropes of the exploding helicopter genre is when a helicopter disappears behind some sort of natural feature, whether it's a mountain or a tree line or perhaps a building, and it then explodes off screen. Obviously, we understand the limit, you know, low budget filmmakers have limitations, and you know, they can't just blow up that helicopter they've rented, but usually they can find some way of, you know, blowing up something that looks like a helicopter to give that impression. Or, as we know from this film, they're not adverse to you know, buying in some stock footage to use to kind of fill out the bits that they can't afford to do themselves. So why couldn't they have just got some, you know, stock footage helicopter exploding?
I'm just imagining the helicopter flying over some water and then a missile coming directly from below. Like from Spy Who Loved Me, I think.
Yeah, no attempt at continuity. That's what you're thinking, yeah. It's it kind of is a very sad end to that helicopter, and the kind of and it's a bit disappointing, because actually up until then, the sort of the helicopter stunts, there'd been actually some, you know, okay helicopter stunts here. We see sort of Ray Wise commandeer the helicopter. So, yeah, it is kind of disappointing that, you know, having done some reasonable stuff with the helicopter they've got involved in this film, that they don't do something a little bit better when they want to blow the thing up. It kind of, the impression I got was like, we finished with this helicopter now. We just want to get rid of it.
Yeah, this cannot be deemed a viable means of escape. We need to remove it from the script.
Yeah, with as little fuss and as little cost as possible. Yeah. Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. So, Jay, thank you for joining me to review this film once again. Do you want to take a moment to plug some of the projects you were involved in?
Yes, thank you for having me. So we've mentioned Con Air the podcast and Deep Blue Sea the podcast, where Mark and I are going through those films. On Deep Blue Sea the podcast, we're now doing kind of Deep Blue Sea adjacent films. So that's films featuring sharks or directed by Rennie Harlin, taking place at sea mostly, that kind of thing. And once a month, I host Lampity over on the Lambcast, which is a movie trivia game based on Jeopardy. That's always a lot of fun. And my personal site is Life vs. Film, lifevsfilm.com. Not a lot happens there, but everything I do does get plugged there at some point. You can find me on Twitter at LifeVSFilm, if Twitter still exists when this podcast comes out.
Yeah. You'll have to wait and find out for that one. As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website at explodinghelicopter.com for more reviews and information about films where helicopters explode. If you could rate, review or retweet us, I'd be very grateful. Otherwise, we'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hey, would you like me to help you with that, sweetie? Hey, watch the Italians.
I have an IQ of 143 and a green belt in Taekwondo. I think I'm perfectly capable of lugging this suitcase, don't you?
Hey, you got yourself a little Weisenheimer over here. She belonged to you?
She's my sister.
Lucky you.